Welcome back to Friends Unfiltered. Today's episode will also be a bit different because we'll be having a dialogue compared to what we would usually have. So I have a special guest with me. She's like a mom, and we wouldn't have been able to have this episode without her type of perspective. We're actually meant to be like 2-3, but time is running out and I have school, so I need to get this out of the way. We could do a rerun, but I think we'll be fine with this for now. If you're new here, welcome, and if you're not, glad to have you back. And if you haven't listened to previous episodes, please make sure you do so. Subscribe, share, and I hope you enjoy this episode. So today we'll be talking on parenting, and to start, I would like my special guest to introduce herself. So over to you.
A very good evening to you. My name is Idowu Moradeyo. Mm-hmm. I'm a businesswoman. I'm also a project manager. I'm a mom of two and I'm happily married.
Fantastic. Like you said, you're happily married. So I'll be asking a couple of questions.
Go ahead, Bill.
Some might put you on the spot.
Really?
Just be open. It won't be too tough. I actually lost most of my questions since I lost some media on my phone and I couldn't retrieve, but I think this would do for a start. So the first question, what was your childhood like? Like in a quick summary, like the typical childhood experience.
The typical African setting.
But yours, in case there were like some uniqueness to yours.
I think it was fun. I was the only girl amongst four brothers, and so it was fun. Crazy fun. Parents were very strict, and I was a church girl. I grew up in the church setting, and I think that's about it. So it was fun. A lot of values and a lot of principles were instilled in us at that time, and I think that's about it.
How many brothers did you have?
Four brothers. I had three brothers before me, and I had a younger brother.
Okay. Did you have a rebellious stage?
Not really, but maybe to my parents I might have had one. Mm-hmm. But I don't think to me I had one. I think it's always like that, isn't it? So yeah, I think in my late teens, my mom found it difficult to understand me. Mm-hmm. And considering the fact that she was a bit of a strict mom, you know, that didn't make things. I was trying to express myself. I was trying to get a little bit of freedom. Mm-hmm. And I think it was very tough for her to understand that. Mm-hmm.
So now as a parent, how have you tried to, let's say, prevent that recurrence with your kids?
I think I try to be as open-minded as possible with them. We talk a lot. I try to get their views. Still trying to keep my own values, you mm-hmm. know. And so I think to an extent, if they would describe me, they would say, mom is a little bit different, but she's still a little bit of an African parent. You know, that you cannot take away. Mm-hmm. But I think I try to understand them, how they feel at every point in time matters to me. We also do a lot of table talk. As a matter of fact, we had one last week where they tell me exactly how they feel, you know, about certain things that I do. And sometimes I explain to them, other times I apologize. And when I get back to my me time, I like to process those things and, you know, filter and know the things that I would work better on and the things that I will just leave the way they are.
That's a very progressive approach. So permissive, it's you're more open, you know, like you're ready to learn, you're ready to grow with your kids. Mm-hmm. Because you know that times are progressing, so you're ready to unlearn certain things, and like you said, you still have your values, but you're just open-minded, you're ready to involve them, just carry them along so there's no miscommunication. Mm. And all that. It might have its downsides, but I think for the most part it has a much more healthier relationship.
But let me say at this point that as much as I agree with you, another thing to consider is the type of child. Mm-hmm. You know, for some children, I mean, the truth be told, some children will just choose to be rebellious regardless of the mode of or your style of parenting. And so when you notice a child, it's important that, you know, you change gear and you actually try the approach that would be best, that would be better for that child.
Do you think how they turn up to be is entirely independent of how they were brought up? I don't know, should I rephrase?
I think I understand what you're saying. Okay. I think it has a part to play.
Okay.
I think it has a part to play because when a child grows in a setting where they cannot express, you know, when a child grows in a certain way he or she cannot express, you know, herself or himself, I think sometimes that could affect them growing up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone grows up in a setting where maybe social skills are poor, relational skills are poor, I think it could determine to an extent the sort of adult or the kind of parent they would be as well. So I think that the upbringing of a child or the style of a parenting has a huge part to play in a child's life. Have I answered your question?
Yes, I think you've done that just fine for now.
Okay.
And the authoritarian style, it's the more dominant, or is the standard here in this part of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what I say is final, no open to change. I think this is best. And I think the times that we are now, it just comes with so much backlash because the youths of nowadays, as you people usually say, we're not so...
Gen Z,
yes, yeah. We're not so open to this, that type of, like, we know that that is what has been, but it's not what we would like to continue. You know, we are looking for a change,
okay.
That progressiveness, and for the parents that are keen on that authoritarian style, most of the time, if not all the time, the children always have that rebellious stage where they just want to fight for their freedom. And they do all sorts. Some would harm them more along the way, but it's just, you know, when you're trying to express yourself and there's no room for that,
I get you.
You'd eventually just burst out in different ways. So
I get you.
Well, you said you're in the middle, so I guess that's good balance. And like you said earlier, the talks you have, I think they will go a long way to install different set of values with them.
Mm-hmm.
And okay,
I was gonna say, Bill, that, you know, I do understand, and honestly what our children sometimes should remember is we were once like them, and that, you know, makes me extremely conscious when I'm raising my own children, because I remember when I was 15, I remember the issues I had with my mom. I remember when I felt unloved. I remember when I felt unheard. And so because I do remember, I've not forgotten majority of those things, I try to throw in a balance when dealing with my children. But the fact remains that we have passed through this same, you know, process before. And so there are certain things that we know, you know, we can almost predict. I'll give you an example. If my daughter is talking about, you know, a boy-girl thing, I understand this process and I can allow her air views and I can advise her. But there are certain times that I would have to put my foot down. And the reason is I can almost predict the outcome of that decision. And sometimes that is what our teenagers don't understand. That because we've been there, because you know for sure most times that this is going to be the outcome of that decision or that situation, you want to guard them. That's our job as parents. There is no mother or father that wants to watch, maybe he saw a child make a mistake, especially when they've passed through that and they've made that mistake themselves. And a lot of times parents don't necessarily come out, or maybe they're not bold enough to come and share their own experiences with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's a possibility that whatever a child is going through at a certain time is exactly what that parent has been through. It's like a mom telling a child, a girl daughter, you know, don't do this, don't do that. Could she have been a rape victim?
Mm-hmm.
Could she have been taken advantage of? But you know, down here, because of our culture, sometimes parents don't share their stories. Especially if they're gory, and you know, sometimes it just really could affect the child, and so they never tell you. And so whatever thing, whatever instruction, whatever guidance they're given to a child is from their own experience. So there is something screaming, saying no. They're not telling you the reasons. Mm-hmm. They're just coming out to say, don't do that. Don't go there. You know, so what will I do differently? I like to have, both my children know about my childhood stories, you know, and I'm thankful to God that I really did not have such a bad experience. But truly, for some parents who have had bad experiences, it may be tough at this stage of their life to share, I mean, such experiences with the children. Maybe when they're older, when they're like in their 30s and 40s, some of those things can be said or told.
But for kids, were very inquisitive, so sometimes your reason for not allowing us to do certain things, especially when they're not voiced, is not just enough for us.
Like, I agree.
Like you said, if it's like your daughter is having some boy drama and like you can predict, but at the same time, I think the more transparent you are, the more understanding will tend to be.
Correct.
So I know the story might be, let's just say, traumatic for the parents, or they just rather leave that buried. And with the whole, there's a lot of mental stigma here in this part of the world, but we're not even going to get into that. But I'm sure you get what I'm trying to say.
I do.
So, for example, if I want to go and have dinner with friends, and I'd give you a notice, and I'll say, okay, Mom, I'm going with my friends. We're having dinner at so-so-so place. And you say, no. The next question is, why? No? Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that for me, if you don't have an answer for that, it's like, we just see it as punishment, or you're holding us back. You're mean. You're not understanding. Like, and sometimes we see it as, you obviously went through these things. So why the repetition?
Do you mind if I cheapen something?
Okay.
I actually had this experience, I think, a few weeks ago with my daughter. And she had come home to tell me she had an outing. And let me say at this stage that, again, I totally agree with what you said. And I don't have a problem with someone questioning, you know, why. And trust me, I would always give a valid reason. But one of the things that I say to my daughter is, when you come home and you tell me you have an invitation or you want to go somewhere, sometimes you don't give me the details of the outing. So for example, Mom, I want to go out with my friends. Where? Somewhere on the island. I mean, come on. In this time and age when things happen, I will feel a little bit irresponsible when I can't account. Or, you know, I can imagine my husband coming back and he says, oh, where is our daughter? And I'm like, she's somewhere on the island. Mm-hmm. And then the next question is, oh, who are you going with? Maybe. You can imagine starting that conversation with a maybe. And I'm like, oh, no way. So you're not even sure about where you're going. And then the next question is, okay, is this person going with you? These are the friends that I know. Is this person going with you? No. Then you tell me, one of my friends that I've never heard about, one of your friends that I've never. And so sometimes, trust me, a lot of the things that we do are out of love, out of care. We want to protect our children. You know, I am very, very big on my children having fun. At a point in time, I would say to my daughter, you know, you're very academically sound, but I need you to develop your social skills. And when she comes up and asking, who are your friends? You don't go out enough, you know. But as much as this is what I want for her, there must always be a balance. And we must apply a lot of, you know, common sense when it comes to going out and, you know, doing other stuff. So sometimes this is what I would leave you with. Sometimes when parents say no or something, could it be that you've not given a detailed information. This has to do again with age. I mean, a 22, 24, 25 year old is already an adult, but my 16 year old is telling me that she's going out and she's saying somewhere on the island, I'm going out with some of my friends. Then I do have a problem with that, and I'll say no over and over again. Do you agree with me?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
So we've reached that compromise.
Okay. So who's winning?
I think we'll let the audience
decide.
Is it
team Bill or team ID?
Team parents, team child.
Okay.
Still on that, let me give another instance.
Okay.
So in a scenario where you're the only child, and obviously we know that your parents will cherish you because you're their only child.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to protect as much as they can and even keep you to themselves as long as they can, because they know that once you're gone, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you're always home. They don't let you go out because they're scared. Country is not safe. And primary school, the students, secondary school, the same. And then you get to university and you're just suddenly exposed to so many different things. And that lack of experience of some certain conversations that should have been held will just cause you to be very lost.
Mm-hmm.
So in that type of scenario, looking at it from the child's perspective, I'm always home, and you know, they just have so much hatred. At one point they can target hatred or resentment for the parents. And so
I would say that communication is key. There are certain things that my children don't do right now, but because they don't do them or they're not exposed to them doesn't mean that they are not well informed about them.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we have evenings, I'm hoping that tomorrow night would be one of those, we have evenings where we just sit outside, outdoor or inside, and we're talking about different things. And my husband is telling the children crazy things that he did in uni, in secondary school, how we went for club parties, how we was a biker, how we was, and we're sharing experience, you know, experience with girlfriends. I'm sharing my stories. So the truth is, in as much as my children have not personally experienced this thing, they know about them. And so what am I saying in essence? I'm saying communication is key. If I had an only child, am I going to protect this child? Absolutely, yes. You know, but I'm not. Would I also care that this child leaves Iso alive? I think I would want to do that. But most importantly is to hold conversations. What happens in university? I say to my children, come to mommy and come and tell mommy about boy, girl. I pray every day that the children should grow. And so if my daughter is saying a guy is talking to me, that is part of growth, you know, that is part of the process. And so I don't have a problem with that. I'm not going to shy away from things like that. I'm going to have such conversations. I'm going to have conversations around why don't I want you to go out? You know, I'm going to have conversations around insecurity around the neighborhood and try to put in things, you know, that one can do just to make things better. So if the child cannot really go out, what do you do in the house? Do you have movie nights? Can you deliberately, you know, make friends with one of our friends at school and invite them? If you don't want to go to theirs, you can invite them over. Such a child have cousins and nieces and nephews? And every now and then you do something that, you know, that at least would make up for other things that the child is, you know, lacking or missing. I don't know if I've made any sense.
Yes, a lot of sense. Okay. So the next question, how would your parents have described you?
Lovely. Prayerful. Caring. My mom may say stubborn.
Emphasis on me.
May say stubborn. Giving.
Like generous.
Yeah, like generous, yeah. Okay. And very creative, I guess. My dad, I'm the only girl. My dad absolutely adores me. So I doubt if he would say anything negative about me, even if he had one.
Okay, next question.
Okay.
Were there things, like, you growing up, were there things that happened, yeah, you experienced that were recurrent that you were not comfortable with? Maybe especially in that period where in your teens, where you may have rebelled. What were the things that were recurrent that you were not just happy with? And now that you're a parent, were you able to translate and avoid that or those certain things?
I think so. I think I had major issues with my mom. At some point in my life, probably when I must have been around JSS 2 or 3 in secondary school, I remember at that time that I just hated her. You know, I just did not, and this was intense. I had goofed one time in school, and she actually came to school, told this wicked in quotes housemaster what I had done, and I was embarrassed at the dining hall. And you know, as the guy, you know, was actually smacking me, I remember each smack I took, I was like, you know, but God punish this woman, wherever she is. You know, but now what has changed? Everything I am, you know, I'm thankful for my mom, to my mom for.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of these things, our children would never understand until 5-10 years, until they become full adults. Now, what am I doing differently with my children? My mom was strict, and she just wanted me to be perfect. She wanted me to be a perfect cook. She wanted me, and we lived in, you know, those days that I recently read something. It was like a write-up, and in the write-up I saw, if you wake up too late, you get smacked for it. If you wake up too early, you get smacked for it. If you don't wake up at all, you get smacked. I mean, those are times that we grew up. And so what I do differently is I remember all those things that I did not like, and I try to work on them. You know, do I shout on my kids, and do I sometimes expect a level of perfection? I grew under my mom, and so to an extent, I think I'm a little bit like her.
Uh-huh.
And so I call myself to order. So one moment I'm like, okay, you have to do this way. And then once I realize that, okay, you're going too tough on this child, I do apologize. And I'm like, exactly what do you want to do? You know, my daughter is in the process of taking a decision, you know, about college. And it's not so much of this is what you should do. It's what exactly do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
I am happy. As long as it makes sense, I'm going to go, you know, with you. I'm going to pray with you. I'm going to give you all the support that you need.
What's your take on early exposure? Like just putting your kids out there to see things for themselves?
I think it depends on what aspect we're talking about. If you're talking about early exposure to social skills, I don't think I would have a problem with that. If you're talking about early exposure to getting independent, I don't think I have a problem with that. If you're talking about early exposure to the boy-girl issue and, you know, things like that, watching movies they shouldn't be watching, I think I have a big problem with that. I tell my children, enjoy your childhood. You know, sometimes I want to become a child. You know, I wish, you know, I could just use the magic wand and just, you know,
go back
and become a child. And so if this is the realization, then why would anyone want to rush a child to become an adult? You know, so again, like I said earlier, it all depends on
what type of exposure.
You know, the area and the type of exposure, exactly.
What's your take on not divorcing for the sake of your kids?
I think I'm right in the middle, and it depends on how bad the case is. Sometimes I've watched or I've seen parents who will take such decisions not to separate or divorce from their partner, and what they do at the end of the day is arm the children in the marriage. sometimes a mother, for example, may choose to want to stay in because of our kids, and in the process she would achieve what she wants to achieve. So how she's staying in, but what she doesn't know is that she has actually harmed the children the more. And so I would say that it depends on how the reasons for the separation or divorce, where couples are very mature and to an extent still regard each other, it may work. But there are extreme cases where it may be safer for the interest of the children, especially for the couples to go their separate ways.
Okay, so to you, it's just, it depends on what would cause the separation.
Yes.
Okay, so where would you draw the line?
Okay, where there is violence, any form of violence at all, I think it may be safer to just exit the marriage. You know, because, I mean, the parents are not going to be doing the children any good. You say you're shielding the children, yet they see you every day. They see you fight, they see you call each other names. And sometimes the children are usually on the receiving end. Because when these things happen, someone is mad, someone feels, you know, belittled, someone feels, you know, I mean, pained. And the outcome of all of this is actually on the children.
In terms of religion, how do you balance divorcing because of violence or abuse, and what the Bible says as to matrimony?
Okay, I think, again, I've been married for 17 years, and so my views 5 years, 10 years ago wouldn't be my views, you know, presently. One of my favorite scriptures is watch and pray. And this is applicable to a lot of things. So the Bible tells us to watch and pray. Watch is like, permit me to describe it the way I like to, do. Shine your eye.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wake up. And it's not telling you pray and watch.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is watch and pray. So in my own, I would say the Bible is saying, don't be foolish. Even in marriage, I want you. It's my will. You know, it's my desire to see you do well in marriage. But if it doesn't work, call a spade, it ain't working. Don't be foolish. Don't put yourself down to a place where, I mean, these days you read and you get to read on social media how some people have been stabbed by their partners. It doesn't really have to get to that stage. And so I'm a firm believer of working things out. Stretching yourself, but the moment where you're overstretching yourself and you're going to break down, you may have to take that tough decision.
I think I would have less patience when it comes to, let me just target red flags. Like when I see some certain red flags, for violence especially, like obviously, I think for men it's generally different.
It's disrespect for men, isn't it?
Yes, but like when it comes to violence, it wouldn't be, most times we're not on the receiving end of the violence.
Mm-hmm.
Although mm-hmm. it happens, but like generally speaking, it's the other way around. Mm-hmm. It's the woman on the receiving end. That's if it's physical, because if it's emotional,
it's verbal and emotional, mm-hmm. the man actually may also be on the receiving end.
Yes, so
yeah.
Well, I just think I'd have less patience because of the exposure I've had and the effects I've seen these kind of things have on kids. You know, you have children that are in homes where domestic or emotional violence is the day-to-day, and you would ask and you would just find out that they dread this thing called marriage. It's not something they look forward to, because what they know as marriage is pain, is suffering, is seeing your mother cry is a different level of heartbreak. And so a child growing up in that type of environment where they would have to comfort their mother, or just being helpless as to seeing them that way, they don't know marriage from any perspective other than what is going on in their home. So they would dread that kind of thing, and they're not looking forward to marriage. And it just affects everything else because they know that relationship leads to marriage. So yeah. If relationship leads to marriage and marriage is this, do I want to get into a relationship?
I would say, Bill, you're very correct. You're right. Nevertheless, as we grow, or as our children grow, they begin to perceive things differently. So my parents, in as much as they were Christians, never had a perfect marriage. And by the way, I doubt if anybody has one. But maybe I should say it wasn't close to perfect either. At some point, my mom was a tough cookie. My dad was a bit of a perfect gentleman and all of that. And so they had some sort of clash, somehow. But I had a problem. I had a brother who values a very good marriage. And so whilst we were growing up, we used to go to this fellowship like every weekend. And he just picked this particular couple. He absolutely adored them. And somehow they became his standard and his model for marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever thing he thinks about marriage wasn't gotten from my house. Now, for someone in such a situation, I know that it's tough, but this is what I say. You can't afford to live your parents' life. At some point, and that is what being an adult means, at some point, despite the fact that this is tough and this is what you've seen all your life, you'll see people in church, you meet friends, you see people who have maybe not a perfect marriage, but a marriage that you can admire. And so we must forgive ourselves. We must forgive our parents, not just even only in marriage, but in a whole lot of other areas. And so if all you get to a point in life where you say, you know what? My mom has a fantastic saving culture. I'm going to pick that. My mom has a nasty behavior. I love her, but I'm going to jettison that. Oh, my dad is a perfect gentleman. I'm going to take that. My dad is proud. I'm not going to take that. That's what makes people an adult, to be able to decipher, to be able to know what is good for them. So back to marriage, for someone that has lived all their life in a home that has broken them, I think most times, you know, God in his infinite mercies would always expose people like that. They would always find love, maybe through friends, through family, in school. And so the key thing is, would they allow themselves to rewrite their story? And so have we had people who have lived in broken homes and have perfect marriages and done things right? I think, yes.
Wow. I think that's a very healthy perspective to look at. Because most of the time, we just run along with the pain, and We don't look for how we can rewrite the story, as you said. We just dwell on the past and we feel there's no change. So I guess it's just encouraging to hear that there are options,
mm-hmm.
and things can be different if you just look in another direction.
Yeah.
So for now, those are all the questions I have written I could gather in such time. So first off, I would give you room to ask questions, like things you like to understand from the Gen Z.
Okay.
As our tag.
Okay. I think that's I was looking forward to that, you know. What sort of parents would you prefer? Can you talk me through the sort of parents you know the Gen Z would prefer?
Okay. Balance, like in between the in between the authoritative but more of the permissive parent, that it is a parent more open to flexibility. You can have your standards, things you will not double down on, but at the same time you're open to have exemptions in different scenarios. Mm-hmm. You're ready to have conversations, you're ready to be understanding and just be involved.
Okay, I like the word balance, but that would be ambiguous if you ask me.
Okay.
Because where do you draw the balance to be balanced?
Okay.
So I'll give you an example. There are certain things that I truly would not be able to understand even in 100 years.
Okay.
A typical example is the style of dressing. I can understand why a young man would want his trousers to be right at his bottom. I like trends, but there are certain trends that honestly, they just don't make sense. I can't just understand. And so if you're talking about balance in that area, I'm still going to say no. I'm never ever going to come to terms. Maybe if the child goes to uni, there are certain things, you know, he or she can do. But I think I sometimes would have issues, or I may not be that flexible when it comes to certain things. When and I think that's okay. That's the average parent.
When I said balance, I also mentioned you would have some values that you would not double down on. And if an example would be mode of dressing, then that's fine. As children, we should also be able to respect those kind of things and see
and be flexible as well.
Mm-hmm. And see how the restriction comes with love. And let's say you grew up in a house where, because I know my mom, she'd usually say, I didn't want to bring that up at all, but she'd usually say when she was growing up, they couldn't talk in the presence of their dad. If their dad is there, they can't say anything. That it was authoritative, you know. It's my way or the highway. Mm-hmm. There is no, as long as you are under my roof, mm-hmm. that type of household. And to me, it's like, you did not like that. You didn't like mm-hmm. being able to express yourself. Mm-hmm. So now that you're a parent, what steps are you taking to encourage your children to be more expressive? Mm-hmm. And I know sometimes, subconsciously, the things that our parents did that we did not like, I'm not speaking for myself because I'm not a parent, but I know I've heard from parents that, you know, say they didn't like this, but they just found themselves repeating some certain things unconsciously.
That's called the DNA. It's the genes. And so I did mention to you that sometimes I when we were talking about the authoritative parent, I think when it got to a point where I said, I'm a little bit like my mom. You are, to a good extent, who you lived with or where you grew up. You know, so I can tell you for free that in a few years, you will see yourself repeating certain things that you complained about to your children. So it takes a conscious effort. Also, let me also say that the joy of a parent is to make their children happy. And so certain things that we do now, honestly, are actually our best. We don't know better. Some will go an extra mile to read books. Some will go an extra mile to talk to counselors. Some will go an extra mile to seek help. Culture and religion haven't helped either. You know, you're trying to, religion is saying, you know what, the girls should wear skirts, the boys should bat their hair. Culture is saying they should do certain things. The Gen Z want to weave their hair. The boys want to have piercings. And so sometimes we grew up in a time where certain things were labeled irresponsible. And it's a shame that honestly, it's not our fault. That's how we perceive those things. Mm-hmm. Until we die, that's possibly how we're going to perceive them. So it's tough to understand when our children come in and say this is exactly what they want to do and they don't see it the way we see it. So the child has a point. The parent also has a point.
So how do you reach compromise?
I think we're going to go back to balance. We must have conversations around certain things. I'll share something with you. Just earlier today, my brother posted the picture of a son. He lives in Canada. And my dad commented, "Lovely picture, but please tell him that this hair doesn't make him responsible." Remember I said I have four brothers, and so everybody wrote something. I'm like, "Oh, Dad, this is the Generation Z. You've got to change your perspectives. Everybody wrote something. The question is, do you honestly believe that my dad would change his perspective? He may choose not to talk, but this is my dad, not even me. Mm-hmm. Now, coming back to, you know, the balance, I think it's important to sometimes not feel vulnerable, but express how we feel as parents to our children. My son wanted to plait his hair over the holiday. And I said, if you give me valid reasons, I would allow you. So if you're telling me my cousins are doing it, my friends are doing that, I don't consider that to be a valid excuse. Because what you're saying is, if others smoke and others kill and they do drugs and they do some other stuff, I'm going to do it. And so sometimes I challenge my children, who are you? Define who you are. You must be able to know who you are, know your style. And then if I believe in that child and I know that if my child comes home with a wig or if my child comes home with, you know, doing anything, I know, I understand the personality, I understand that child, I may not have a problem. But if I'm seeing a child who just wants to, you know, who wants to go with the bandwagon effect. Today, because this is happening, I'm doing this. We are adults, and even we live in a time where, even as an adult, there are so many crazy things out there. I could decide to do something crazy today and tomorrow, because other people are doing it. And so I think in every household, there must be conversations. There must be roundtable conversations. You know, the parents must say, okay, you know what? We have certain standards in this house. And so when you want to do certain things, let's discuss it. Let's know the views. I also feel that the children, to an extent, out of love and care. A teenager, for example, has less than 10 years to spend per se with their parents. Soon you're going to be 21, 22. You will be able to do certain things. I was growing up and my parents frowned over anklets. And I never wore anklets. Today I could wear two to my dad's house. He doesn't even notice. And if he noticed, though, as a matter of fact, one of those days he commented, he said, I didn't buckle it well. I'm an adult. And so sometimes we can also just say, you know what? Let's honor our parents. I'm not saying the parents should take the mickey always or be extremely authoritative at all times. But sometimes it's good to connect with the child and say, we don't agree on this because of this reasons. Can we reach a compromise? And other times, or the times when a compromise cannot be reached, the children should also understand and honor their parents.
Okay, so before we proceed, just want to point out that we were mixing authoritative with authoritarian.
Okay, sorry.
Apparently, yeah, there are different styles.
Okay.
Authoritarian is what we should have been saying.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. So just to put that out there.
Okay.
So we have authoritarian, which is what we've been speaking. Then we have authoritative, which is more inclusive. Like, you can ask yourself questions like, you give rules.
Okay.
If you're open to explain the reasons for these rules.
Mm-hmm.
If you prioritize maintaining a positive relationship with your child. And we already said, you set your limits, you set your boundaries and everything, but you're ready to communicate properly. That is one thing the authoritative has
over the authoritarian.
Mm-hmm. They're ready to communicate. They're ready to explain. Like I said, for the authoritarian, it's my way or the mm-hmm. highway.
When it's a no, mm-hmm. nothing changes.
Yes. So the authoritative is still more open to, they're still strict.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where you find yourself. I think that is the balance.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. So yes, it's healthy. There's balance. But we would still complain, yes, but it's more because we can see you have your reason. So we have something to consider for on ourselves. Like, this is why they're doing what they're doing. So even if we still don't agree, but at least we know. So I'm just putting out there to clarify to the audience.
Thank you for that. But let me ask another question.
Okay.
How do you... how do you deal as parents? How do you expect us to deal with issues when we know that you're certainly wrong, but to you don't know that you're wrong? Because I mean that's why children are children.
Mm.
Certain things they don't know, that they're short-sighted. If you took a child to a place that is dangerous, they're just going to be jumping up and down. The adult sees what is ahead. And so how can you connect with such a child so that they understand that, you know what, this parent is not just shouting or screaming their head off for no reason. They can see something. They know something that you don't know.
Well, I think one thing that may work is having third-party interventions, like where it's not from the child, not from the parents, you have like a third person, like a counselor. Like when you know like you're having these issues constantly, you can bring someone that would speak unbiased so the child can listen, because the same way we're not ready to change our perspective, sometimes parents are not ready to change as well. Like you said, your dad may
not say anything.
He might not say anything, but he's not going to change his values. He knows what is wrong for him and he knows what is right. So even if he's quiet about it, it doesn't mean he agrees.
Mm-hmm.
He's just giving you that freedom
mm-hmm.
to
express,
discover for yourself, set your own standards. So the same way it is for the parents, it's for the child most of the time, if not all. Because to us, what we're doing should be permitted. It's normal. It's Gen Z, it's a trend. So we don't see the wrong in that. So even if you say, but this is not right, or it's not safe here. If you do this, I can see the future. If I stand on a tree, and if you stand on a tree, or if I sit down, you will not see. Like, sometimes that is not just enough.
I get you.
It's not enough. So one thing I think would work is having counseling. Or just, it will take time, but communication with time would help break down these walls of miscommunication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it's constant, you might not even have to deal with the issue in the first place if you had prioritized proper communication with your kids from the early stages of your life. So those two things, I think counseling and just communication.
Okay, I think I like the third party thing, and so I would I'll take that. My biggest problem, social media. I understand how positive it could be sometimes, but I also believe that for the younger children, younger teens, there must be not a bit of control, a lot of control. So what do you have to say? Because that's tough. When you can't join this platform, Like, oh, mom, but my friends own it. And then you try to put restrictions because obviously they're Gen Z. They always have
a way
to beat it. You seize the phone, they go on the laptop. You seize the laptop, they hook up with their friends. And this could be addictive. This could have, to a large extent, a negative influence. And so you tell me, how do you expect today's parents to cope with the social media palaver?
I think what came to mind, I'm trying to put it to words, is something my mom used to say when we were little, and she would still repeat from time to time, is trying to see how I'll put it, but it's what it's trying to say is, when you train your child today, it's how they will grow tomorrow. So I think if you set certain values in your kids from the beginning, there's some things that will not be able to sway them, no matter how demanding or common it is. Because something my dad would always boast about is, when he was in university, he had a car, and most of his mates did not have a car. I'm talking about back then, it wasn't common to have a car in university. And his mom gave him a car, and she trusted that it would not be a distraction to him. And it wasn't. He proved her right. She was discouraged by other parents that, you're giving this young boy a car, that is a whole level of freedom. He can leave campus every day, he can choose to. But because of the relationship they had, so, and knowing that she trusted him against all odds, that's at the back of his head, just prompted him to make sure that this did not distract him. The way the world is now, you cannot hide your children from social media, except you lock them in a room. But once they're out there, once you take your eyes off them, even for a second, they would find these things for themselves. So what you can just do is, the time that you have with them, make sure you're having conversations. So even if they encounter some beliefs or some conversations that will just toil with their moral, they would already had these conversations with you. So it's like,
they know how to process them and handle them.
Exactly. It's like, oh, he's saying this, my mom already told me to expect something like this. So that has no impact. So that's what I just communication, it all boils down to communication. You know, you're making things clear, you're communicating at every different stage of the child's life. You're making sure that the way you communicate is also growing, because the way you talk to a 5-year-old is not the way you talk to a 16-year-old. As they keep growing older, you know how growing up was for you. So as they grow, you keep exposing them, because if they're exposed outside first, then you will have to battle with counteracting the beliefs that they've now gotten from outside. But if you started it first, then you're going out there with all this wisdom that they've gotten from you, and they know how to process all sorts of things. So now that social media is here and is here to stay, and I know that it's addicting, but just be confident enough to know that you've done your part, and if they go the other way, it's not on you. You've done what you could have done. But most of the time, it's certain that if proper communication, you're watching and praying, you also encourage certain cultures, that there's nothing the social media would provide that would be able to curb this already existing values, if they are there at all.
Well said. I'm hoping and I'm trusting that the exposure and the communication, you know, the gift from the house, will truly be sufficient to withstand what is on the outside. Because I think what is on the outside seems maybe too much, you know, for them to handle and play with. But we'll keep trying, like you said, and just be hopeful.
And the way it is now, it's either they have it or they don't. if you give them a phone or any device that has access to the internet, there's no restricting. So when you're giving them these devices, you know that you're ready to have, like, they have access to all this information.
So you better, it's better to deal with them for.
And if you know, okay, you need more time to speak with them and do this or that, then you know where you put your feet down on certain things. Is it the phone? No. They will still find you, like you said, but whilst they are under your watchful eye, you're doing some certain things that, you know, that's okay. This would last at least even for that short time as you're out. When you're back, we're back to how things are. So yeah, I know my parents will complain that I'm addicted to my phone, but for me, I'm not seeing it that way. Like, I know I can see my screen time because you have things that I can see your screen, and then you'll be like, oh wow. So in a day, averagely, I use my phone for 9 hours a day. To me, it's okay. So I don't know, this, it's very addicting, but it just, what would you rather have us do? What are the...
Communicate. So I would give you an example. Once or twice, my children have, you know, gone out with their friends, and the whole idea is just to hang out and to have a nice time. But then you see that majority of them would bring their phone, and they're hanging out. Everyone at some point would be on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of my greatest worries is that when our teenagers become adults, they may not necessarily know how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Communication is key, whether not just in the family, at the workplace and all of that. And these are things that over time you get better at. So when you go out, I can imagine a typical Gen Z, you know, person going out on a date. You're gonna be wondering, what exactly are they gonna be pressing their phones? And these are issues, these are things that have even become issues, you know, within the adults. Because somehow we don't know when to, you know, just say, put the phone down. When we're having family dinner, everybody comes to the table. And so every now and then, there are certain times in the house, I'm like, no phones, please. And sometimes I go upstairs, they have the phones locked up. I'm like, okay, let's have a no phone time. Let's play board games. Let's talk. You know, and the initial thing is, okay, you can tell that they're a little bit reluctant. But when we start either watching a movie or when we start talking, you know, then they can get better. And so for us, we have worries. We honestly want to understand. We want to let you be. We know your times are different, but we also know that there's a bit of a danger,
mm-hmm.
you know, ahead.
Okay, so something that I experience often is, okay, you have your problem with me and my phone.
Okay.
So I drop the phone,
mm-hmm.
and I come to you. How good are you at engaging me when I don't have my phone? Because
I get you.
You know, I've had so many awkward moments where I'll say, okay, let me go and talk to my dad, and I'm not with my phone. And I will say, this conversation, you will start it. Until you start it, I'm not going to say anything. If we're going to just be looking at ourselves, no problem. But let me see how, and you see how hard it is for him sometimes. And he's really struggling, and I'm like, you see?
Okay. So what is your intention? Is your intention for him to fail? Because, you know, sometimes we can actually help our parents.
Mm-hmm.
So you can suggest certain things. Sometimes I'm like, maybe before now, I'll tell my children, this is what we're going to do. But right now, I'm getting dusty, and I'm like, okay, what should you do? What should we do?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, what should we do? You know, and them like, they're like, we don't know. And this is what happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you are complaining that, you know, parents are not talking, but how much talking are you also doing? We want the children also to suggest, where do we go? What do we do? Start a topic. And you know, for you, Bill, I'm going to challenge you. Say something. Start something that was interesting. Sometimes it may not be your own regular gist. You know your parents, and by now you know their strengths and their weaknesses. If my children want to get the best of my husband, no school talk, it may not be boy-girl talk, ask him about savings and business. He's going to be there talking to you for hours. Ask him about his machines at work, you know? And so to an extent, you also, the way we study you, the way you want us to understand you, you also must go an extra mile to understand. What would be the best way to talk to your mom? Oh, she's cooking in the kitchen. Help her do some dishes, and a conversation starts around there. But you come in, you take a piece of fish, or you open the fridge, you slam it back. And, you know, so we also want you to be sensitive. We want you to understand that it's tough. It's generally tough in Nigeria. I'm not just talking financially. Everything just seems, you know, tough. It looks like it's just a tough life. And so sometimes when dad comes, mom comes back, how was work? Say something. You know, it's not just about watching the memes and TikToks and something. You know, send a message, just the same way you would chat with your friend or with your boo. I'll say, oh, dad, I'm hoping today would be a good day. Send a scripture. You know, sometimes say nice things like, oh, dad, oh, thanks for my school fees. You know, just say something. We don't want takers. You've just done one, and the next thing is, okay, dad, I want Air Force Ones. Mom, I want our AirPods and all that. You know, I mean, sometimes we begin to say, we begin to think our children's just takers. Just the same way you want us to understand you, you want us to unlearn and relearn. I think the same measure is, you know, mm-hmm. expected on the other side. Mm-hmm. Understand us, understand that we grew up in another generation and it's a struggle for us to adjust. But if you're trying to adjust and we are trying to adjust, certainly we'll get, you know, to a favorable spot in the middle somewhere.
And the thing is, some parents are not alarmed as to how uninvolved they are in their children's upbringing until too late. And then they're trying to put so many things into place and it just becomes so chaotic. One thing I would give, for example, is language. In your time, you would learn your language as a child growing up, your parents would speak and you would imitate and you would learn. That's how children learn.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, most parents don't speak their native language in their homes. And then they'll still end up being the ones to complain that you don't speak Yoruba, you don't speak Igbo, but you are not speaking it to us. So at which point did you expect us to pick it up from? And you know that when it comes to science, the easy time to learn language are those early years. And now we're maybe from 15, 16, after we've gone to the village a couple of times and your uncles and your mom, they're complaining that these ones are not speaking. And then you're like, you now want to try, but it's too late. And then you're putting so much pressure on us for not understanding when you did not do the work.
Okay.
So. And I'm not saying that it's impossible to learn at that point, but it is not going to be easy. It's like learning a course, because at this point we're not able to pick these things as easily as we would if we had the opportunity to imitate them. So now it's like we have to learn it from scratch, and like it's like learning a whole different, you know.
Okay, so I'm gonna go back to something I spoke about earlier on, and I think for you to rewrite your story, I love my parents to bits. I think they're wonderful parents. I grew up in a house where my mom was just a spender. She has it today, she spends it. My dad it wasn't so prudent either. He wasn't such a spender, but then he wasn't so prudent. And so I grew up not having a saving culture. Did he affect me at some point? Oh yes. But did I get to a point where I needed to say, okay, my parents have lived their life. Where am I going? You can't push all the blame on your parents. We're not perfect. And you know, before you know it, you're also in our place and you're raising children, and then you know how imperfect you are. And so I think, maybe not for the younger ones, but for someone like you at your age, you must know what you want. You must know that certain things are good for me. These days, we've jettisoned our language, and it is one of the most important things. I lived in the UK a bit, and I was working with this girl, and she was born and bred in the UK, and we were working this day. I was a manager. And I called my parents in Nigeria and were talking. And there was this other guy, he was a white bloke that would come in, and it was such an adorable boy. And he would talk. You guys are the ones doing the work. He's talking. He was a funny chap. And before you know it, it's not working. It's just keeping you guys in a good mood. And so that particular day, when I was talking to my mom, I guess I almost told my mom something about this boy, but somehow I never said it. And so I dropped the phone and I was trying to get back to my table, and this young girl just said, "Ori to se man soro ni." I froze. She was born and bred in the UK. She spoke perfect Queen's English. And she didn't go like her Ritoshi Mansura with a tonation or something. She spoke pure. And I marveled. And I had to ask, and she said, okay, me and my cousins, we've never been to Nigeria, but we went to like a school and we experienced a little bit of racism. And, you know, from there we had to stand up. And so me and my cousins, when they're talking, you know, we're doing our own talking, and somehow they just picked that language. And so what am I saying? You will get to a place where you can tell by yourself. So if you choose to rebel and say, okay, I don't want to learn, you didn't teach us when we were small, so be it. Who's on the losing side? Your dad can speak. If he gets stuck, he knows how to bail himself out. Very soon you're going to become an adult. If it's someone who wants to go into the business world, you may need to communicate. Speaking your local language may become an advantage to you. So even as children, not minding the mistakes of, you know, your parents, not minding their inadequacies and all of that, you must get to a point, and it comes with age, where you say, regardless, oh, they've had a bad marriage, I want to have a good marriage. I didn't really learn how to do this, I'm going to learn it. And guess what? This same social media we're talking about has the advantage to teach you many things. Bill, are we connecting at all?
No, we're connecting. It's a huge pill I'm swallowing. You know, so like that point where you just reflect, and I won't say any of this you've said is something I've not heard before, but in this type of setting where the goal is to have a calm conversation, it just hits differently, I would say.
Okay.
So, every other question I would have wanted to ask, I think what you said just answers it all. When it all boils down to rewriting your story, like, most of these things would not change it might remain to the, with the little time you have left as a teen or a young adult with your parents. So I think we all just need to prioritize rewriting our story when it comes to the bad, and then taking the good, because there's always good, and, or there's mostly good, because there's always exceptions.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you so much for that. And you know, just to say a few things before we close, or we wrap, we call this a wrap. The first thing is, in most cases, parents always love their children and they want the best for them. So the first thing is, every child must take that as a fact. You wake up in the morning and you say to yourself, I am loved. You go to bed, you say to yourself, I am loved. The moment you've settled on that, anything whatsoever, I mean, whatsoever comes after, whether it's a wrong decision or it's been too firm on you, you understand first that it is coming from a place of love. I think that can make a whole lot of difference. That's the first thing. The second thing is, your parents are not perfect. They're not perfect. You are not perfect either. The third thing is, we all belong to different generations. Things are done totally it seems as though there is a 360 thing that has happened. So what mean is, we're growing in a time where they say, okay, a boy takes a girl to dinner, a boy doesn't, and then we're suddenly seeing girls taking boys to dinner. It's a complete shift. So the same way you can understand us is the same way we cannot understand you. A 13-year-old may not be able to understand this, but as you grow, you begin. When you get into university and you begin to take subjects like psychology, they help your reasoning, they help you begin to read books, you begin to gain exposure. You must at that time begin to understand certain things. Again, we must have a forgiving spirit. Parents must be open to forgive and overlook. Children must be able to forgive and overlook. And not every child will be privileged as good as not every child will be privileged to have open-minded parents. Unfortunately, when you have, keep the conversation going. When you don't have, back to what you said, explore talking to a third party. And I'm hoping that that would be the right person, because there is a danger in talking to, top parties, you know. But like I said.
Okay, so to wrap this up, we've spoken on authoritarian and authoritative. So I'll just run through the other two, because they're popular four.
Okay.
So we have permissive parenting, where parents set the rules just for setting sake. I've just said, don't do this. If you don't do it, no problem. I will not talk, but I've just said. Then, or they give out consequences, or they don't give consequences. Like if they set the rules and
they don't follow it through,
there's no consequence. Then you think your child will learn best with you just being more uninvolved, like that type of mindset where you give so much space, so much room for them to. So that's the permissive parenting. And there's the obvious effects on this type of parenting, because when you give so much freedom, there's so much value at the same time, because they're just pushing. They don't know morals, they don't know they can't culture a discerning spirit. Everything is just...
everything goes.
Anything goes. Yeah, very lackadaisical. And then the last type of parenting is uninvolved. You're not just there. Maybe you're absent. You're just the parent legally. You might even go as far as you don't provide. You don't protect. you're just the parents. And for us, sometimes where we'll define a parent, uninvolved parenting is as good as not a parent at all. The parents that enforce career paths on their kids. But I know you're not, you won't fall under that because you've made it clear.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I had a friend who I discovered was doing that, and you know, I just couldn't believe. You know, I think that was a little bit, sometimes, I think most times that the parents would do such, I think it's usually for their own selfish interests.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if a parent has built probably a big firm over the years, and they're just thinking, you know what, I want my child
to continue,
they're going to disregard your interests and your path in life, and just, you know, want to impose that you do
their line of work.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's good to know that we have parents that are firmly against things like that. So I have no further questions at the time. It's been a pleasure having this talk.
I think I've enjoyed myself.
I
have learned too, and I'm going to take a whole lot of feedback, you know, and I'm hoping to improve my parenting skills.
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to improve being more open to unlearn and just reach compromise.
Good.
We'll work on that, you know. So I will still be your dear stubborn boy, but things will change in time, you know. I'll just, you know, there's one thing to hear, I'm here from here, and then it goes out the other ear. I would work actively, you know,
try to block the other hair so it doesn't go out.
So just have all of this in mind. So once again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Bill, for having me.
It was a pleasure. Long time coming. And I'm glad we've been able to document this episode now. So thank you for listening. If you're still with us till the end, I hope you gained a couple of things and it just helps you to see how much your mindset has power on how you see things, and you just become more open-minded. So share, subscribe, send it to your parents, even you could listen together, you know, and just point out things and be like, okay, this is you, mommy, they're talking about you now. Just have fun with it and just be open to learn, and we'll see you on the next episode. If you haven't listened to previous episodes, please do so. You can follow our Instagram. It'll be in the link. It's already clear that Mr. Dowu here don't have any social media for you to reach out to. But if you have any questions, do let me know, and I'll be sure to get it back to her. So once again, thank you, and we'll see you in the next episode. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.